Once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, if you're in and around your radio, then you can, we're going to talk cars. We're going to talk about your cars, motorhomes, boats, what kind of oils we should use, what about flushing this or flushing that. This is what my car's doing. What do you think it might be? Those are the kinds of things that we can typically help you with. So I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician and have been since 1991. I've been in the auto repair industry since 1968 and been around the block a few times and fixed more than my fair share of cars. And I've also had the opportunity, and I mean this sincerely, of being involved in finding something wrong with a car that was difficult and to put it kind of nobody else could fix. But I was part of a team almost every time of that. So it's not like I'm the Lone Ranger fixing the car. It's a group of us getting together and taking on a challenge. So if you call in, here's what I'd like you to do, please. Gil's going to ask you for your name. And then we're just going to talk about your car. And it's kind of like I have a 2000 Chrysler, whatever, and this is what it's doing. And then there's going to be time for give and take. So when does it do it? Does it do it when it's cold or when it's hot or all the time? All the time. Okay. When it does it, is there anything that changes it? Yeah, sometimes on really cold mornings it doesn't do it. Perfect. Okay. And that's kind of the conversation that we have. Give and take. I make fun of Mr. Google because Mr. Google on car repair issues is actually an inmate in a federal prison in New Hampshire. And he hasn't been in the repair industry for 41 years, 5 months, and 6 days, according to the last time I looked. But I'm only as good as the information you give me. So if I say left or right and you say left and it's really right, I'm probably going to be wrong about the area of where we go to next. So there's 3 questions. I'll ask lots of questions, but there's 3 answers. Yes, no, or I don't know. And every once in a while you can say, I don't drive the car. Let me ask my wife. So those are the kinds of things that we do. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. That's the phone number if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696. That's our toll-free number. 888-960, that's because we're KKNT 960, and then 9696, and you're welcome to give us a call. Part of what I bring to the table is a list of good auto repair shops that are held to very high standards, and it's been a very long time since any of them have been removed, and the guys that are around now have been around for a long time. For instance, Phil. Phil's been in business at Automatic Transmission Exchange since 1968. He has been around the block in the real literal sense of the word. He started when automatic transmissions were just kind of a new idea. And then the progression to where we have 8-speed electronically controlled computer operated transmissions who can actually self-diagnose some of the problems or at least put you in track on the track of the problem and give you at least one of the tentacles of the octopus. You need to go down this path here. That's kind of what it's all about. So if you're in Phoenix and you need a transmission shop and to take a look at a leak, to test drive the car, and you can duplicate a problem and show them, or just to have your thing service, your transmission service, Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street and Washington. You'd be surprised at some of the emails I get. I wish I had time to share many of them with you, but sometimes people take me to tasks, and that's okay because I've always been rather blunt, and that's okay. And you're siding with my wife because she says the same thing. And then we get the people that want to argue, but I can cut the tape up, that conversation out of the tape, because we tape everything, so does the station, and give it back to them and say, I don't think that's what they said. But there are times that I do like the discussion, and it's, well, Mark, why didn't you go in this direction? So those are the kinds of things. 602-508-0960, you're welcome to call us. One of the real concerning things to those of us that own an auto repair shop, and by the way, my family owns an auto repair shop, And we've been in that location since 1994. So 68 to 94, I did lots of mechanical work. But in 1994, I actually, that's not right. In 1985, we opened up our own shop. And then in 1994, we built our existing facility that we're at right now. So hopefully you have a good shop in the area. If you don't, marksalem.com. Click on Best Car Repair Shops, and I'll give you the names and addresses and phone numbers of guys that I trust. The list is important to me because these guys are the ones that take, they have a geographical area, so to speak, and they take cars from people who trust me. And so there's a little bit of pressure on the shop, but by the same token, I think we've removed one shop in more than 22 years. So I'm pretty proud. Now, we've had some shops that have sold and had to come off because you have to have 5 years of experience. So we had some shops that got sold, and the new shop, the shop was removed from my list until the new shop owner has 5 years. It's just something that I feel is important to maintain the integrity of the entire group. We've had all kinds of car-related issues recently, especially with air conditioning and especially with overheating. And what I want to remind you is that your car's temperature gauge is, I don't care what year it is. It can be in the 40s or the 50s or the 60s, or it can be a 2021. The temperature gauge of the engine temperature, should be between half and three quarters. That's okay. That's okay. We go back to the 60s and 70s, and if it got into half, gosh, it was overheating. Today we know that wasn't an overheating. So let me explain. Water boils at 212. Okay? So we can't run your engine with just water. We can't run your engine at 220 because the water in the engine will turn to steam at 212. You with me? This is kind of basic science stuff. So what we do is we mix it with a 50-50 mix of coolant, antifreeze, call it what you want. Well, that raises the boiling point to like 260 or 280. Now, that's an area you don't belong. Okay, your engine doesn't belong in the area of 270, 280, 290. It'll only be there once if you just keep driving it. So the middle area is somewhere around the 190 to 210 mark on almost all gauges. So if you're right around half, it's fine. I don't care what's going on, it's fine. I know it's uncomfortable for a lot of the old gray-haired guys. They want that thing to run cold. But here's the issue that we discovered in the late 70s and early 80s. Water boils at 212. We know that. The problem is that we need to run the motor higher than that. Here's why. Every time you shut your car off, the condensation inside of the engine cools. And you know what happens to vapor, water vapor, when it cools, it turns to a solid. So we go from steam to liquid. Well, water then mixes with the oil, which creates sludge. Are you following me here? We're going down a bad hill. So because the water's there, it mixes with the oil. Now we have sludge, and now we have all the ramifications of sludge. And that's exactly why the cars in the 70s and the 80s, 70s and 80s, I'm comfortable with that, didn't have a life expectancy north of 75, 80,000 miles. Because you take them apart, and it was mud. It was black mud throughout the entire engine, and the motor was either overheated or it died because the oil turned into jello and it couldn't be pumped, and the motor just ate itself from the inside out. We need to take the water out of the oil, so we have to get the water temperature above 212. When we do that, when we get it up to 220, which is normal operating temperature, regardless of what your grandpa told you, 212, 220 is normal operating, then the water turns to a vapor. And the vapor is sucked from the PCV valve, positive crankcase ventilator. It just vents the crankcase, vents the engine. Water vapor is sucked out and sent out the exhaust. There goes your water. So by operating the engine at full temperature, 220, there will be no oil. And as a result, I'm sorry, there will be no water. And as a result of that, there's not going to be any sludge. And as a result of that, your car engine will last 200,000, 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 miles. That's it. So we learned lessons as we went along. Oh, we got a caller, Gil. Who might that be?
Say hello to Marco.
Marco, good morning, buddy. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I've got some spark plug questions.
Sure.
What do you think about these new Lexus and Toyotas where they change from a $100 spark plug change to a $600 change?
I've been there before. I mean, we have been there before. This was a tough call when we went from conventional spark plugs of the old Motocraft and Champion and AC Delco and Autolite. Then we went into a Platinum, and then we went into a double Platinum, and so forth and so on. I can tell you this. There are four places in the world that make spark plugs. What's the chance that yours is made in a factory that so is the lowball guy's made? So the idea is when I faced with this question, the answer is really easy. Just get on the internet and search your car with all the major spark plug manufacturers. And then price, and then get the part number and Google it and price it. The idea is the $600 sometimes is how much of that is labor, or do you know?
Well, what I'm talking about, these late model Lexus and Toyotas, you have to take off the intake plenum, the wiper mechanism and all that to get to the back spark plug.
And we do that on the front of the cars of a lot of cars today, too. The accessibility is difficult. Okay, we're going to go in this direction, and it's my fault because I jumped the gun. I'm sorry. I understand completely. Folks, what he's saying is we now have jobs that were $100 or $150 that are now $500 or $600. It's the same job.
Mm-hmm.
The spark plugs have been moved, and now we have to gain access to the spark plugs. Now, in reality, you're only going to change the plugs once every 100,000 miles, but many, many times during that first 100,000 miles, we're going to be in that area. So I'll give you a good example. There was a water pump the other day that was brought to my attention for like $1,500. And so I had to look it up. Well, the labor's $1,200 because the whole front of the engine has to come apart. Well, the sin here is why didn't we do the water pump when we did the timing belt? You know what I mean? And it's the same way with your spark plugs that are hidden. In the first 100,000 miles, hopefully towards the latter end of the 100,000, hopefully we're going to do something around that area, and then the shop's going to call you and say, hey, we're already here. Shall we change the spark plugs? And you say, yes, you're already there. You mean the labor's free? Well, there's going to be a little bit of labor to screw them in and screw them out, but it's not accessed. You won't pay to access this area because it's already been paid by this. So that's the answer. Are you changing yours at 100,000 miles?
120.
Okay, and that's fine. You can go longer. There's lots of people that choose to go longer. You'll certainly aware of it when one of them starts misfiring, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
I've got a spark plug here I took out of our Honda Pilot at 120,000. And, the porcelain's nice and tan, and the specs is 1 millimeter to 1.1, and it's just not snug at 1.1. That's at 120,000, so we've got a Lexus ready to change, and I'm thinking about just leaving them in there.
You're exactly right. I got to take a break. You stay right there, but I'm going to answer your comment about what have I got to lose, and we'll talk about that right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. We've got Marco on the lines. There's four open if you'd like to join us. Car question, wanted me to settle the argument between you and your husband or you and your wife or whatever, 602-508-0960. There's four lines open. You can grab one. I'm going to do care of business, and then I'm going to go back to Marco, and we're going to talk about his problem a little bit more. Blackwell Automotive is up at 40th and Greenway. I've known Tom for probably 25 years or more. I know that he knows what he's doing. He has a wide variety of skill sets, including vintage cars all the way up to motorhomes, diesels and gas. He knows right from wrong, and so do his people. He's a little bit of a tyrant, but then so am I. The idea is he has that whole northeast section of the valley, and I don't have anybody of his that provides services like he does in that area at all. And it's tough to get on the list because you have to really... You have to have good reviews, and you have to know what you're doing, and you have to treat people fairly. He does a good job at that. So if you're in the northeast part of Scottsdale, that North Phoenix, northeast Phoenix area, northeast Scottsdale, then Blackwell Automotive would be the shop I would recommend you go to if you don't already have a shop that you love. Okay, we're going to go back to Marco. Marco, The only thing I would tell you is if you ever end up with a check engine light and a misfire code, or if you feel a misfire, then let's not go too long on that. Because I don't want to fill the catalytic converter up with a bunch of raw fuel and end up costing you a $1,200 or $2,000 or $3,000 catalytic converter. But I think it's, I wouldn't have any problem if I were in your shoes. I wouldn't have, pretend I was a veterinarian. I wouldn't have any problem running that risk because I think it's minimal, if not just not there at all.
Great.
Okay. All righty. Thank you, Marco. Yep. That's a good question. That was a good question. We also have that with water pumps and timing belts in the front of the motor. He talked about the sides and the back of the motor. It's true. But what's happening now with the cars is accessibility has sometimes doubled and tripled and quadrupled in cost because of the stuff they're putting around the engine. So like I said the other day, we had an $1,100 bid on a water pump on a car. And at first blush, all of us looked at one another and said, somebody's been drinking or whatever when they looked at the labor manual or they didn't have their glasses clean. But in fact, it was truly an 11-hour job. The problem is that to go in there, you can accomplish three or four jobs at the same time. So if you go in there to do the water pump, let's do the timing belt, let's do the tensioners, let's do the front crank seal, the camshaft seal. Let's do a bunch of work because the labor's got you there already. So in that particular case, I explained to the friend of mine, I said, hey, Ray, it's true, and it is 11 hours, but here's some of the other stuff I think you should do. But what's important is the water pump doesn't hang off the front of the motor anymore. The water pump is deep within the front of the motor, and we have to take all the fan belts off. We have to take all the pulleys off. We have to take the radiator out. We have to gain access to the front third of the engine as opposed to the front 10% of the engine. And he understood. He understood. It was no problem. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. If you'd like to call, ask car question. We'd be happy to help you. I don't have an axe to grind, and I don't talk about my shop. I have a shop. It's in Tempe, but this show isn't about my shop. This isn't an opportunity for me to thump my chest and tell you how great I am. This is for you. I've been doing radio in the Valley since 1988, and the whole time, and I'll tell you a real quick story. At the very beginning, there was this old guy in the radio business that I was scared to death of because I didn't understand the hierarchy, but today I'm still scared of him. And he was gruff, and he was mean, but not unnecessarily. But he said to me at the very beginning when he said, we're going to give you a try answering car questions, and we're going to put a host with you. So we're going to have Michael Dixon or Jack Blair or Lisa Millay. Those were some of the names that I worked with way back in the late 80s. I said, that's fine because I don't know how to push all the buttons. He says, but if you think you're going to sit there and thump your chest for an hour and tell everybody how great you are, you got another thing coming. And his name was Jim Tazrak. He's since passed. He was a tremendous mentor to me, and I looked at him. he's a very big guy, and you just look at him and you just know he's not interested in funny business. And I said, yes, sir, I'll make sure that doesn't happen. Well, today that's followed through. But he also said something that was like looking into the future. He said, if you develop credibility, there'll be the path to your door. He says, but if you're a jerk and you're out there thumping your chest, telling everybody how great you are, and you've got your employees on the radio with you all the time, and blah, 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 he says, all you're going to do be is an airhead. And I said, is that a play on word like air on the airhead? He didn't think my joke was funny. So, yeah, we've been, but this is about you. This is about your car, and I'm going to give you the very best advice, and I want to tell you that's something I'm proud of. Virtually nobody takes issue with some of the procedures and thoughts and paths that I suggest to people. And the reason why is because they're correct. It's not because I made them correct. It's because they're already industry acceptable standards. That's what it's all about. Okay, Gil, who's next?
Next caller is Wade.
Wade, good morning. How can I help you?
Yes, I've got a question about the, I've got a 2017, Ram 1500 with the Hemi 5.7. And I've got the Hemi tick. I've looked on YouTube and stuff, but is there anything we can do to get that taken care of, or should I just sell it off, or
well,
what should I do?
Okay. I'm well aware of the Hemi tick, but here's the problem. The problem is somebody puts their Hemi tick's description on there, and then from there it blossoms into this big problem. But in reality, if you dig deep enough, you'll find out that the Hemi tick is fixed by 5 or 6 or 7 or 20 other people's repair. I remember looking for a tick for a customer's car, and the customer was adamant that it had to do with a lifter. And in reality, it was a bad spark plug wire. And you could hear the tick, tick, tick every time the spark jumped through the boot into the container of the spark plug. We've had exhaust leaks, and so the question is, does the tick go away after the car warms up? Yes, it does. Okay, well, then you probably have an exhaust leak. So we're going to pump a bunch of smoke into your exhaust pipe, and wherever it's leaking, we'll find it. So this Hemi tick and this Chrysler tick on this Ram, there's 20 different fixes on the Internet. You can try them all, but let me ask you a couple questions. When does it happen?
It happens right in the mornings when I first started up, and in the afternoons too.
Okay.
When it first started. But then it goes away once I drive it a little bit. It still happens a little bit. I don't believe it's that's a good idea with the spark plug wire, but it's not that. It sounds more of a constant tick.
Okay.
not just a sporadic tick.
All right, well, here's what you do, okay? What you're saying, and I'll regurgitate, you're saying, this is something inside the motor, and I'm real concerned that there's going to be a detrimental effect down the road. Perfect. Get on the Internet, order an oil sample jar from an oil analysis company. Have somebody suck out some oil out of the dipstick tube or loosen up the drain plug. Take an oil sample, then take another oil sample 1,000 miles later, send them in, and they'll tell you what's growing inside the engine. Whether we have an abundance of aluminum or stainless steel, or we have copper, or if you have water in the oil, it'll tell you all kinds of fancy stuff. And see, that's the unfortunate part about it is you have classic examples of an exhaust leak.
Okay.
And when it's cold, it ticks, and when it warms up, it stops. And if you want to find the exhaust leak, here's how you do it. Oh, stay right there, because in 3.5 minutes I'll come back and get you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. We'll be back in about 3.5 minutes. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're here till noontime, so you've got lots of time. The lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And, Wade, you stay right there for just a minute. Kurtz Automotive is at I-17 and Bell Road, northeast corner. He's been around for a very long time. He's an older guy, but he's got a couple of young technicians, master technicians, who are really quite skilled. And very, very impressive. So if you're looking for a repair shop anywhere near I-17 and Bell, you want somebody that's been around a while, knows right from wrong, and their staff understands what their job is to identify your problem and bid the repair and do it correctly or perform the normal maintenance service. So Kurtz Automotive is certainly a good shop on my list of best car repair shops you can find at marksalem.com. Wade, here's a couple of things I wrote down that cause ticking noises on cars I've fixed in the last 2 years. A broken flex plate, a cracked flex plate, which is the flywheel between the transmission and the engine. Exhaust leaks. On the General Motors, we're starting to see roller cam lifters go bad, and we get ticking noises intermittently on those. Air conditioning cycling on and off. That was a great one. It was the person just had a habit of leaving the air conditioning on. And I'm not talking about your car. I'm giving you examples of other ticking noises.
Right.
So the air conditioning compressors tick, 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 tick. And so those are the things. I think it's what's in your best interest is just take it to the shop and say to them, I can demonstrate the problem tomorrow morning. One of the things on an exhaust leak is we just pump a bunch of smoke up the tailpipe and put about 3 technicians underneath the hood and everybody kind of has a flashlight, and we're looking for little whiffs of smoke. But I don't know. Let me change your question. Do you know of a pattern failure on my Dodge Ram, and one of the symptoms is a ticking noise before the motor blows up? And the answer is no, I don't.
Okay.
So do you have a shop that you...
Well, it sounds like the roller cam problem.
Okay, well, the roller cam problem is... Well, the roller cam problem is related directly to the rollers on the General Motors gas motors. And the question is, we don't know yet, is, and this has been going on for years and years, we don't know if the roller on the lifter is defective or if the camshaft's defective. But what we do know is we're doing the whole thing or we're not touching it. So we're not going to go in there and just replace one roller lifter on a bad camshaft lobe. We're not doing that. That's not working. So in the General Motors thing, you're talking about $6,000 plus repair, pull the whole front of the motor apart, slide the camshaft out, put a new camshaft in, flush the whole engine, put all new roller lifters in it, blah, blah, blah. You're talking about, those are the jobs that we love to have come in, because you know what? After you do one 10 times, you're pretty doggone good at it.
Right.
But right. How many miles are on your Dodge?
About 70... Some
73-ish. Okay. I would just determine how it is that you can make it happen and what part of the car interior is it coming from. The left front, the right front, underneath my butt, out the back, whatever. But then just describe in on a piece of paper, and then when you take it into the shop and you write down, "Dear Mr. Technician," and you tape it to the rearview mirror, you're going to get to talk to that guy that's working on your car. And you write down your phone number, and if he has a question, he's not going to go ask the service writer to do it. He's going to pick up the shop cell phone and call you. So that's there's nothing wrong with trying to communicate directly with the guy that's working on your car.
Right, exactly. Yep.
Okay.
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling. Thank you very much, Gwade. The lines are wide open. We have five of them, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. There's 99.9% of you out there are customers that we enjoy having. Do you want me to tell you what the other one-tenth of 1% is? It's God bless the wife that is sent to the shop and told to have the shop do this repair and not tell her why or what the husband's trying to fix. So the shop effects the repair exactly as they're told. Then the wife goes home and the husband drives the car and said, "You picked the wrong shop. They didn't fix it. What's the matter with you?" Or whatever. And now the wife is in the middle between her husband and the shop because the husband, in a real sense, the husband's diagnosis was wrong. That's it. But us old guys are learning real fast about that. So we're asking questions at the front counter now. Well, Mrs. Salem, can you tell me why your husband wants us to replace this scooculator valve? No, I can't really. Well, who's the primary driver of this car? I am. Okay, are we going after a noise? Are we going after a leak? Are we going after it won't start cold? It has a tough time starting hot? Is it a fuel economy issue? Is it a smell? What is it? I don't know. He just said he wanted you to replace the scooculator valve. Okay, could we call him? Yeah. Can you give us his number? Okay, hi, this is Mark Salem from... blah, 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 from my shop. And your wife came in and wants to replace the scooculator valve. I just want you to know that's a pretty expensive repair, but can you just share with us what we're looking for? So when we get there and we find out that the connection's bad or burnt, why don't we just fix the connection? Or if we find out that the vacuum leak or vacuum line that goes to the scooculator valve is just come off, why don't we just plug it back in? So can you help us with that? And that's what most of us old guys are going to do. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You're welcome to grab one. Well, you know what time it is right now? I can tell you. It's time to call the radio station if you have a car question or a car problem. It's easy. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. It's that easy. All you have to do is give us a call and we'll get right on it. Like, I'll give you an example. Jim. Jim's been holding. Thank you for holding, Jim. What can we do for you?
I have a 2021 Toyota CHR. And I assume when I purchased it new that it had the pop-up tailgate because I'm handicapped.
Okay.
But it does not. It's a manual, and I have a difficult time closing and reaching up and trying to get it closed. I called a dealer about the possibility of installing automatic type lift gate where it pops up and you push a button and it closes. They told me they don't do that. Do you have anybody that might want to do something like that?
Okay, and the answer is yes. I think Blackwell Automotive might want to do that. Blackwell Automotive, and I also think Harkers might want to do that. Let me explain. In order for us to determine whether that's going to be an ad that we can do, we're going to spend hours in front of parts books because we need to see if what we're installing can be installed in the cage in the square box we're working with. So it's wiring's not that big of a deal. So if we need, you know, some wires from the front of the car to the back of it for the tailgate, we can run the wires. We can do that. However, if the computer controls the tailgate activity and it looks and sees if the motor's running or if it sees it's in park or if the parking brake's on, we have to make all that connection as well. So I suspect that if you could get someone to do this, it'll cost you very close to you just trading your car in and keeping the license plates, and you'll get an offset on the sales tax and getting what you want. My fear would be is that the assembly, it would be like your car was crashed. We would order the tailgate as if you had that tailgate. Does that make sense? But there's a lot of research that goes on there. Where's the wire coming from? Are we triggered? Do we have some stops, some interruptions of this particular circuit? Oh, look here. We have two cylinders we have to match. Oh, we have to take the two quarter panels off the back, and we have to add this bracket for the cylinders to open and close this door. So and then I want to tell you something. There's guys out there. I gave you some names that would look this up and spend some time with it. But again, the money you're going to lose on the turnaround of getting what you want is going to be very comparable to the money that you're going to lose trying to have this done and then have some. That might be a situation where they say to you, Jim, I'm going to have to mount a switch outside the car to make this work because I can't reprogram the computer to tell it, oh, by the way, you've got this new version 2 liftgate on it.
Okay.
So it's your wife's fault anyway, isn't it?
I'd like to think so, but no.
Thank you for laughing at my joke. Thank you for laughing. Anyway, Blackwell or Harkers I'd start with those two guys. And then you'd just say, Mark said that there's probably nobody out there in the whole wide world that would have the skills necessary to pull this off.
Yeah, because the dealer told me that it has to be wired from the factory to be able to do that.
We redo factory wiring all the time. The time. And so
don't want to bother with it, I guess.
Well, and then there's that issue of liability, and then there's the issue of continuous service. So, yes, you're taking a big risk, and then the risk is going to be very close to the amount of money they're going to charge you.
I'll have to learn how to live with it then.
Well, you could do that, or, you know, there's always an old cowboy way where you put a big come-along on the top of the car, and then you just pull the rope, and it closes the tailgate for you.
I might have to resort to that.
All right.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
You betcha, Jim. Thank you. Nick, you're up next. How can I help you? Hi, Nick. Hey, Nick.
He is there.
Yes. Oh, Nick, you're on, buddy. How can I help you?
Oh, okay, Mark, I'm glad I just popped in and turned the radio on, and there you are. It's been years.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I have a Ford Fusion Hybrid in 2011, and I had it when I bought it from the used car dealer. You know, I didn't really have a mechanic with me, and I didn't bother to ask him if I could have taken the car to a mechanic. So I bought it kind of just on the salesman's knowledge. And what happened is after I paid for it and drove it out, I took it to Sanderson Ford, you don't mind me saying who, and had them change the oil. And they just noticed there was no problem with the oil change, and they just made a comment that the dustpan, the engine cover is missing under the front. And then I took the car home, and then I proceeded to take it after the next day to CB Christian Brothers on 79th and Peoria to have the car diagnosed. They hooked it up. They found two in the red, and it has to do with the evap system of the hybrid. There's a valve that's stuck open, and there's also the a water type pump that keeps the battery, hybrid battery, cooling. And I brought it back to the dealer, and I didn't ask for my money back or to trade off another car. They did give it to me with a an X on the top, the warranty, implied warranty. So they promised at the time of the sale, they'll fix anything, the owner's son. I brought the car to them, and they took it and couldn't fix it. And because it's a complicated problem with a hybrid part, so they took it to a dealer, and I found out it was Sanderson Ford again. And Sanderson Ford is probably working with them, so they're taking their time to find out what's wrong with it. But I already spoke with the service manager, and I had the diagnosis.
Okay, Nick, we need to get to the end of this story, though, buddy. I mean, what's the problem today?
Well, what is that? Is there a lemon law?
Well, the lemon law usually applies to newer model cars. It doesn't apply from Mark selling to Nick. And this isn't going to be in my amateurish legal opinion. This isn't going to be a lemon law thing. Nick, you already know that you should have had this checked out, and you didn't. And now you're in a pickle, and now you're in a bind, and people are trying to help you. I don't know anything about Christian Brothers, but I do know a lot about Sanderson Ford. And it is my impression that without a doubt in Mark Salem's mind, that is the best Ford dealership in this valley. And they have the most experience. They're honest. They're dependable. And they have fixed cars for Mark Salem that he couldn't fix for himself, especially diesels. They got a diesel division over there that's second to none. So it's you just have to kind of suck it up. There's no other chance. I mean, you could certainly have hire an attorney to write a $150 nasty gram to him and say, okay, we bought the car from you. You said it was fine. Here's some repair orders. And here's a repair order for an oil change, but I'm not asking for that back. But here's a repair for some of the concerns that existed. And then their attorney's going to say, well, wait a minute. Isn't that part of due diligence? Aren't you supposed to do that before you buy the car and not after you buy the car? So I tell you what I think I would do if I were you. First of all, I would wait until you get the car back and everything's fixed. Once you get the car back and everything's fixed, I would go back to the seller and I would say to them, here's a repair order of the work that I had to have done. And you'll notice that the mileage on the car when I bought it and the mileage on the car when it went in, blah, blah, blah. I would like you to scrutinize this bill or look it over, please. And if there's any refunds necessary, or any refunds that would be, would be appreciated, and I look forward to hearing from you. I think that would be your best bet, and then there's always time to buy the television lawyer for $150 and have him write a nasty gram to the shop. But those are your only two options. First, you got to get it fixed, and then once you get it fixed, then that'll be it. So that's the best I can do. I understand you're in a bad position, but much of that responsibility falls on the purchaser of the car, especially a used car, with respect to what you're supposed to do before you sign on the dotted line. That's kind of the problem. Okay, who's next?
Say hello to Kevin.
Kevin, good morning.
Hey, Mark. I can remember a time that I used to fix my mufflers with a Campbell's soup can.
We still do.
We still do. That's right. Two C-clamps and you're fine.
Yeah.
Anyways, hey, we have a 2016 Mini Cooper. It's a John Cooper edition. Took it in the Mini Cooper. We said that there's a solenoid gone on the shifter assembly. And they said they have to change the whole shifter assembly out. And I was wondering if there's a back door way in order to fix that. There's no problems with regards to shifting. It stays in park all the time. There's no slippage whatsoever. So I was wondering if we have to replace the whole assembly, do you recommend someone to take it to for Mini Cooper, or is there some type of shortcut to fix that assembly where the solenoid is burned out?
Well, what does the solenoid do that prevents? I mean,
I have no idea.
Okay, all right.
Okay, it recognizes the brake as far as the when you park it.
It recognizes the brake when you park it.
That's what I've been told.
Okay. What did she say? What did she say?
She's saying it recognizes the brake when you put it in park.
Okay, okay, okay. It's called a brake interlock, and so it you first of all, before you can shift, you have to push the brake. And it's not going to let you put the car in park when you're doing 5 miles an hour. So the computer's involved, and it wants to make sure all the parameters are right. But if this is the shift interlock solenoid, it's normally mounted on the shifter assembly. And I think I wouldn't waste a bunch of my time wondering about what if. I think what's going to ultimately happen is that at one time or another, it won't shift out of park. Or won't shift into park, but in your owner's manual, there's an emergency process to get around that. But I, as an old cowboy, I can tell you that many times we can fix that. But more importantly, the first part version number might not be available now. Otherwise, you could just take version 1 and put it on version 1 shifter assembly. But now you have version 1, and all that's available is version 2 with the solenoid and the shifter assembly, if you're following me here. And so that happens a lot. But there's also an opportunity to fix something and not have to buy anything. It is true that this is a problem that my shop runs into at least once or twice a month. We process 20 or 30 cars a day. So we do run into this where we have no choice but to upgrade you because the entire assembly is a piece of crap. And so you plug in a new assembly, you remount it, you make all the adjustments, and you tell the computer that I got a new shifter interlock assembly on here. So I just I don't know that I'd panic right now, but I would familiarize myself with how to get it out of park or how to get it into park with the safety, with your owner's manual, so that you're prepared for that situation. And
we've had no problems with it, but at the same time, what they're saying is, in order for them to fix it, to replace it with a new assembly, they want $2,150.
That's common. That's common. Yeah, I mean the number's common. There's all kinds of that going on right now. And in a real case of the word, it's this. We made your car, and the shifter is a big piece of crap. And so we've decided that we're not going to redesign the shifter and make a solenoid for it. We're going to redesign the whole shifter assembly and fix our mistakes, but we want you to pay for it. That's once a week occurrence at my shop. So,
really?
But like I say, like I said, there's some cowboys out there that own shops that take this as a personal, I'm going to figure this out myself. Oh, I'm just going to build a new bracket for this. Or, oh, no, I'm going to fix this bad connection that they're blaming on the whole shifter assembly. If you want to talk to somebody, talk to Blackwell Auto and talk to Tom about this. But he's going to want to see the car, and he's going to want to see the paperwork, and he's going to charge you for that. So you might try him. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, we have another hour of talking about car problems, car questions. Do I need this? Do I need that? This is what I was told, all that kind of stuff. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair. I've known Tom since 1983. That was slightly before he opened up his Deer Valley and North Phoenix repair shop in 1983. I've always respected him. He's a guy's guy. He's honest. He's dependable. He'll stand up and raise his hand if he wants to be disagreeable. And like, unlike Mark Salem, about 99 times out of the time, of those times he raises his hand, he is being very agreeable. And so if you're up near I-17 in Deer Valley and you're looking for a full-service family-owned auto repair shop that's been around there since 1983, then Action Auto Repair. He's on the northwest corner of Deer Valley and I-17. Randy, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey, Mark, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I appreciate you taking my call. And first of all, I want to thank you for the service you provide to the public, helping people, you know, get to the bottom of their issues and then referring us out to people that take great care of us. You know, it's a big issue people getting taken advantage of with car repairs. But in any case, I have a 2004 Chevy Avalanche with about 200,000 miles on it. It's in great shape. I just have some problems. I went away on vacation for about 3 weeks and driving my secondary vehicle and come back and I go to start the vehicle and it's a slow crank. I mean, I turn the ignition and it won't start. It got, you know, tries to start and it won't. Then I turn the ignition back off and then I crank it again and then it kind of rumbles to a start. So I'm not quite sure whether it's a vacuum leak or a fuel pressure issue.
Okay, well, let me ask you a couple questions. When you turn on the key to the on position, most people just stick the key in the ignition, and the on position time is less than a half a second because they go right to the start. So what I hear you saying is when you went to start it, did it crank? Was the cranking speed slow, or was the, because you said it cranked slow? Is it kind of like a, instead of going yeah, did it go rrr?
Okay. The second one.
All right. Okay. So it's got it cranks obviously different. We have to have some RPM in there to get that thing to start up. So I don't know about, and that cranking slow has nothing to do whatsoever with the fuel pump or the fuel system. Nothing. They're related, but okay. That one cannot cause the other. Now, after you got it running and it's been there since you got back from your trip, is everything okay now, or is it still just sitting in your garage?
I just dropped it off at Interstate Auto, but no, it barely cranked now.
Okay.
But it's eventually, if I pull the ignition all the way on, it just rumbles, and then it starts. But it's very slow crank.
Okay. Well, the battery needs to have 9.6 volts in order to crank the engine over. And when batteries die, we have a top voltage of about 13. No, a good battery in your car is 13 volts. Even though it's a 12 volt, it's 13. So we can't drop below 9.6. And when we get in that 9.6 area, we don't do it goes rah, rah, rah. So I think there's a good chance that all you've got is a battery problem. Now, here's what I'm thinking out loud now. It's not a dead short. You didn't leave the dome lights on because when you got there and stuck your key in the ignition and you hit the key, something brought the battery down to its knees while you were gone, there would have been just clicking. That's all. We wouldn't have a slow crank. It'd go like that. So I think either your battery's old, and I don't know how old your battery is, but if it's 3 years, 4 years old, then it's, your shop should have no problem with this. Put it on a battery charger, get it up to 13 volts, start it up, check the amp draw on the starter, put it on your electronic analyzer, check the voltage. Oh, we started with 13 and now we're up to 13.8. Bingo. I like that. Oh, turn the headlights on. Now we're up even higher. Oh, look at the amps. They went from 8 to 30 when I turned on the air conditioning. Oh, everything so far is just great. That's what it looks like. The electrical systems check should be somewhere around $50 plus or minus $20. It depends on the shop you're at. Okay?
All right, great. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You bet. Thank you very much, Randy. Cranks slow. And the key words there, folks, is Randy had come back and the vehicle had been sitting a while. I pay attention to those kinds of things. Tom, you're up next. How can we help you?
Yes, I've got a little Hyundai Accent. And the question I have, little button on the dash that says Eco, or it seems to slow everything down. What is that actually doing when that's pushed in?
It's forcing you to drive like a normal person.
That's no fun.
Well, with the Eagle button, we do all kinds of stuff. We're going to trim the fuel back to, and the whole purpose is to put you in the economy mode and to save you fuel economy and all that kind of stuff. So instead of turning the injector on like a fire hose on wide open throttle, we're going to crank it down just a little bit. We're going to add a little bit more timing to it until it pings, and then we're going to back off a little bit. We're going to make different changes to the way it, and the shift points. If you want to go into eco and you want a better fuel economy, we're going to shift it earlier in the automatic transmission. So instead of going in, it'll go in. Now you're in fifth gear doing 10 miles an hour. So that's what that eco button does. It's just it's a secondary program to enhance your fuel economy.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
You bet you. That, and no problem. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. Gil's there, and he's got the air wrench running. That means somebody's already there. Who might that be, Gil?
That's correct. Say hello to Mike.
Mike, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I got two questions. I have a 2013 Tahoe, and I've been driving a 93 Blazer for 20-some years, but these new radio things, I mean, you turn on your radio, in like 10 seconds, a bell comes on and says, start your vehicle, battery low. What is there any way to get around that?
this has got to be on the 13 because the 93 didn't have that, right?
Yeah, right. My Blazer, I could listen to the radio all night. But
no, yes, there is a way, and no, it wouldn't be economical. It wouldn't be any of that whatsoever. What we're doing is the computer needs to talk to you. And here's the battery voltage, so to speak. A 12-volt battery fully charged is really 13 volts, okay? And right. when we're charging the alternator at idle and the battery's not completely dead, let's just say the battery is in the neutral position, it's almost fully charged but not quite fully charged. Well, the alternator's going to look at that and look at the quick manual and say, okay, well, I better do 13.8. So you sit there, and the computer looks at this and goes, well, he's had the radio on for a long time. And I actually just queried your computer and found out that you were at behind some grocery store with a woman other than your wife for 41 minutes. Is that true? I'm teasing, okay? Don't even comment on that because you're not going to. The idea is the computer's watching all this stuff going on. And so when it's been cued that when you see the voltage here and then when you see this kind of a draw here or if you see this kind of degradation here, then when he turns on the car, talk to him on the radio and say, hey, you need to have this looked at. You say to yourself, I already know why you're telling me that. It's because I had the radio running when I was working on it for an hour and a half. But to take that out of there, no, you could probably go in there and take that particular feed wire to the computer and change its value or get that signal from somewhere else, but that's not anything most of us would do for you just because we don't really know the ramifications. So is it something that has always been there, or has it just been there the last year?
No, it's always been there. In fact, it was when I first got the vehicle, I thought I had my battery was bad, so I went and got a new battery, and it still did it.
Okay, one other thing. I don't know if it's ever been updated, but it just like everything on your phone and everything else, updates are a dime a dozen and come every day, hundreds, thousands every minute. So the only thing I could think of is if it was a pattern failure, then it might not be a bad idea to take it someplace and say to them, would you check to see if there is a software update for my truck? And if there is, then have them do a software update. And if that was a pattern failure or a problem that created lots of problems, then probably it's going to be fixed.
Well, you know, I have a portable DVD player, and I plug it into the cigarette lighter, and I can play it for 5 hours, and the bell doesn't come on then.
Well, I know, but you're using you're just doing the cigarette lighter, the key's in your pocket, but when you're listening to the stereo, the key has to be on the on position or on the accessory position, so now the computer gets to see what the heck's going on.
Ah, I see. Okay.
But, you know, okay, if if there's guys out there that would look at the wiring schematic and they would try to determine where this voltage is coming for pin number 317. And they've determined that 317 is this. And then they might say, okay, well, I'm just going to hopscotch from the cigarette lighter to that wire and feed it a different voltage. And then all of a sudden, Mike says, Mark, we went from the, it never saw the cigarette lighter to now it does see the cigarette lighter. And the voltage is the same. You've compounded my problem. I say, hey, no problem. I'll just cut that wire that I put in there for you. But I think you have a better than even chance that this has already been fixed in an upgrade of software. And so that, I think that's what you should look for. Okay?
Okay. Is there anywhere in town that does undercoating?
No. I'm. Did you send me an email about that?
No, I did not.
No. I got an email about pressure washing the underside of a car, and I don't know anybody that does that. But spray undercoating is what you're talking about.
Right.
Have you got a pencil handy?
Yes.
Okay, 480-598-1234. Ask for Alan, because if anybody would know that, he would.
Okay.
And I'm looking for somebody to raise it up in the air, and I want them to spray the wheel wells or whatever. But I also want to tell you, are you talking about the 93 Blazer or the 13 Tahoe?
No, the 93 Blazer had an undercoating when I got it.
Okay. I was going to say that to you. The 13 is going to have undercoating, but the 93 is not. Now, the other thing you can do, and this is what I do to my old stuff. I go to the car wash and I clean out all the wheel wells. And then I go buy some 3M rubberized undercoating, and I usually buy 9 cans. And I mask off the wheels, and I do it in the driveway, and I have water running, because as the rubberized undercoating falls, it'll hit the water, it'll turn to a solid and rinse down into the drain, and it won't make a mess. And so I can undercoat the 4 wheel wells and the underside of the rear bumper and the exhaust and stuff like that. I don't do the exhaust. With some 3M undercoating. And I want to tell you, as an old cowboy, I've got cases of 3M undercoating because I use it to spray on the limbs of the trees that I cut off. I use it for everything. So if you want to do it yourself, 3M undercoating, you'll see it. It's you'll find it easy. Okay.
Well, if I wasn't an old fart, I could probably give it a try. But could you give me that number for Alan again?
Yeah, it's 480-598-1234. You might ask who does your oil changes, and say to them, "I'll bring it in clean. I'll wash it the night before. I'll bring it in clean. When you have the oil, you're changing the oil. If you pop all 4 tires off of it, would you undercoat all the area around the top half of the tire in the fender wells and stuff and on the backside of the moldings and stuff? What would you charge me to do that?" I mean, most of us might charge you $100 plus or minus 50. I'm guessing, because it's not more than an hour to spray those down. They're probably going to have to, you know, wash the floor, or hopefully they'll put water on the floor so that way that undercoating doesn't stick to the floors. But yeah, whoever does your oil changes, have them do it. But call Alan. He'll tell you. Thank you very much, Mike. We're going to take a break. The lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Well, it's 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I'll get that out all right. My name is Mark Salem. We're talking about car repair issues, undercoating, voltage problems, updated shifter assembly, all kinds of stuff. And if you have a car question, I'm pretty good at answering them, but I'm also pretty good in saying I don't have an answer, but he will, and here's his name and phone number. So I've been around the block a couple of times with the car repair industry. Been in it since 1968, and I'm also an ASE Master Certified Technician, and we have a shop of our own right now, but the show isn't about my shop, it's about your car problems. So 602-508-0960, you have 4 chances to get in. We have already right now, we got Henry. Henry, good morning, how can I help you?
Good morning, Mark, it's your prison husband.
Oh, gosh, Henry, how are you, buddy?
Waiting, I got a hearing coming up, just kidding. No, So here's the deal. If I brought you a car and I said I wanted to get my transmission checked out before I go on a trip, and you put it on your scanner and you drove it and you said there's a slip between third and fourth, would you, A, tear it apart and look at it, or would you go another route, maybe changing the filter and just draining it and putting in new, or would you check the transmission control module and swap that out? Would you start at the bottom, I mean the very highest cost, and work your way back down? You start at the lower cost and work your way up.
Neither one. So you took it in, and up until the time you took it in, you didn't know anything about this, slip between third and fourth, right?
I felt a hesitation once, but I didn't know if it was between third and fourth or whatever. I didn't know if it was.
And so they went in, and did they find a code?
Yeah, 148 or 3 okay. or something like that.
Okay,
they
said. All right, you forgot the part about you're driving down the road, and then all of a sudden you get a check engine light, and then you also have
right.
a symptom.
I didn't get the check engine light.
Okay, so that's a history code then. So it's been in there.
Okay.
The answer to your question is I do nothing. I wouldn't do any of the things you said. I just keep it and keep driving it. Yeah. Have you ever serviced the transmission on it?
No, I've had it for 5 years and only put 10,000 miles on it.
Okay, well, I'm halfway in on that question. Transmission fluids at 10,000 miles in 5 years is 5,000 miles a year divided by 12 is what, 60? 600 miles? I don't know. Henry, I'd default to do nothing. I'd just say keep driving it, Henry, and we'll deal with whatever we've got down the road. It's nice for us to go into the historical data and look at all codes or mm-hmm. codes that are soon to be and all that kind of stuff, but I don't let my staff fix those. We wouldn't have never bid that. We wouldn't have done it. So the idea
well,
is I need more symptoms.
I didn't have anything done, but that's what they were telling me. They wanted to go in and look around, and I'm like, on a guess? You want to go in?
Well,
go ahead.
How many times has this happened to you? How many times have you got the hesitation?
One time.
God, no. Heck, no. The answer's no. I'm 100% no. One time? Gosh, my truck does stuff one time. Every week I drive and it does something I've never seen before. I'm not going to chase those things. And by the way, it's a Dodge truck and I'm just lying about it. It does it every day or every week. But no, heck no. No. And 10,000 miles, if there's a problem with it, it's going to be related because Henry doesn't have a girlfriend that lives 50 miles away. Gosh darn. So no, the answer is no. I'm not doing anything. I'm not going to fix anything. I'm not going to change any fluids or anything like that at all. I might pull a sample out of the transmission, send it out way, and find out what kind of moisture, because I need Henry to get the transmission temperature up above 212 so that we boil the water out of there and send it out the vent. But if Henry's just driving short trips all the time to the liquor store and back for his wife, then the answer is yeah, we got too much moisture, and let's go ahead and drain and fill the transmission. Those are the options. But... No.
Well, I will reserve cell block C for you next weekend.
That'd be fine, Henry. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you. All righty. Anyway, Kurt, we've talked about some good shops, and I'm going to talk about another one, Auto Dynamics. In my opinion, it's Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. I've known Chuck. I've known his son, Derek. And Chuck's been around since 1982 when I met him. And we've worked on cars together. We've worked at the same facility, and he had a gas station down the street from the gas station I was working at. So Auto Dynamics is on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue, so otherwise Grand and 99th Avenue. He's not going to sell you unnecessary parts or repairs. If you're looking for a shop that has good technicians, that's been around a long time and wasn't born yesterday and didn't come out of the ground yesterday, that's been in Sun City for 20, 30, 40 years, the answer is Auto Dynamics. That's my favorite place, and that's the one place in Sun City that I refer people to. Alrighty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Folks, right now in our industry, what's going on right now is important that you understand. In the old days, we got to see you every 3,000 miles. So we got to tickle you every 3,000 miles for a tire rotation, a transmission flush, your shock absorbers are leaking, the bushings on your cradle are bad, you got a little bit of an oil leak at the rear main seal. We got to see you. Today you don't go in for 10,000 miles. So we've lost all of that work, all of those opportunities to sell you something. Now, I'm not going to pass judgment on whether those opportunities are good or bad. You need to do that. That's your job. But the idea is that my industry, some people in my industry, make up stuff. And they make up stuff that benefits them. So we don't care that your spark plugs, the manual says they go to 100,000 miles. You have no idea what kind of a risk you're taking if you don't change those spark plugs at 50 or 60,000 miles. Those spark plugs, 100,000 miles, that's four times around the world. Four times around the world. You really think those spark plugs are going to go four times around the world? But, by the way, Mrs. Salem, we need to flush your injectors. Well, because it's just due, and your injectors, do you know how much it's going to cost to replace all eight of those injectors, Mrs. Salem? It's going to cost a lot of money, and the flush is only $295, and we're going to keep those injectors working perfectly, and we're going to probably affect your fuel economy in a real positive way.
2 minutes.
This is the kind of crap that that there's certain members of our industries are talking about, and it's real self-serving. It's just real self-serving. Here, I want to just teach you two questions. When someone tells you, and right now we're in this flush world, flush your transmission, flush your power steering, flush your engine, flush your upper intake valves, flush your exhaust, flush your cooling system, on and on and on. We're flushing everything. You just say, what symptom do I have today that you're going to fix? Because that is a do you beat your wife question. There is no good answer to that. What kind of symptom do I have? Describe to me. Well, I don't know, ma'am. The technician said that you needed to have your upper intake manifold flushed and your injectors flushed. Okay, well, here, just tell him to call me and tell me what he saw that led him to point me in that right direction. Because, first of all, these kinds of flushes, these intake flushes and injector flushes, they don't appear in your owner's manual. But you can also ask him that. You can also say to them, show me in my owner's manual where it says that I'm due for that or that that's a viable flush, so to speak. We've got people flushing transmissions that should go 100,000 miles because they have a synthetic transmission fluid in them that's just the greatest transmission fluid we've ever seen in our lives. Of course, it's protecting a transmission that costs $10,000, $12,000. But we've got factory fluid that's just awesome that lasts almost forever. But we've got people out there saying, no, in Arizona, that manual's not written for Arizona. That manual's written for, everybody. In Arizona, we need to change that fluid at every 50,000 miles. Oh, boy. I don't like that. So you need to just, where does it say in my manual that I'm due? And what symptoms are you going to fix by your suggested flush? And, oh, by the way, write it down and just write it on your business card for me. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Mark's got a frog in his throat, and I couldn't get the frog out before I had to go back on the air, and that's really Gil's problem. And so,
how's it my problem, Mark?
I don't know. You made me eat that cookie faster than I normally would have, and that's the reason. I don't understand why in your world everything is by the second. Okay, I just don't understand. You sound like my wife. You know what I mean? Okay, 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open. You got 1 in 5 chance to pick it up. Actually, you got 5 out of 5 if you just dial now. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question. I like it especially when my husband and I disagree about blah, blah, blah. And I'm pretty good with those kinds of questions. I'm also, if someone has told you needed some work, I'm happy to talk to you about what the symptoms would typically be that would necessitate that work. And obviously, if you have the symptoms, then I agree that that would be something that would be looked at or done. By the same token, I have a vibration that's shaking the back seat of the car, and I can feel it in my butt. And they tell me that I need to have the entire top end of the motor replaced. That's a disconnect for Mark Salem. One and one doesn't equal two on that. We've got a vibration in the seat of your pants, and they're telling you need an engine, and those two things are different from one another. And the vibration in the seat of your pants is when you're moving down the road. So those are the kinds of things. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The only shop in Mesa that I can recommend to you is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley, pretty centrally located for the city of Mesa. I've known those two young people, Brian and Thelma, for probably 30 years. I don't ever had a problem, a complaint about Thompson's Auto Repair to me. although I do get an abundance of people that send me notes that say I went there and they were everything you said. So if you're in Mesa and you're looking for a shop, and they do oil changes all the way up to the most sophisticated diagnosis and repairs, it's a full-service shop, just like the rest of us are, then Thompson's Auto Repair is the place that I would send you. That would be a good place to start. My list, which is available at my list of the best car repair shops in Phoenix, is available at marksalem.com. The list is shops that I know the owners. I have their cell phone numbers. They have mine. And we all work together. And we think if all of us are pulling on the same rope, then we're all going to elevate ourselves and hopefully our industry. When you take your car in for repair, we kind of talked about this the last break, is and I'm going to use the vernacular. I'm going to use words that are used behind the scenes, okay? It's giving you a haircut, clipping your hair, okay? You come in every 3,000 miles, and we know that every other time we should sell you an oil change or a tire rotation. Now, when we do the tire rotation, we get to check your brakes. You actually pay for the tire rotation, but really, we want to see the brakes. So try to sell you brakes or see if you need brakes. That's kind of how it works. The idea is that when people and the shop tells you you need something on your car, the first line of defense is please put that down in the mark section on the work order. And then put your name and your extension number. Put the main number and your extension number so if I have a question, I can call you back. You see, if the service writer doesn't trust the technician, the service writer's not going to write that down. But if the service writer is in cahoots with the technician and the two of them are upping sales and the technician recognizes this is a very profitable operation, then you probably won't see it there either. So the idea behind the whole this self-defense for car expense is just ask questions. Ask for information. And one of the best questions is, what symptom do I have today that you're going to fix with the fact that you're going to flush my fuel injectors? Well, bad fuel injectors cause rough idle. Oh, I don't have any rough idle. It causes hesitation. Oh, I don't have any hesitations. How's your fuel economy? Well, it hasn't changed in years. Oh, okay. Well, what about, do you, when you get gas, does it cost more for gas? Well, yeah, but that's related to the price on the pump. It's not related to, you know, how the car's running. Is there a check engine light involved in this? Because if I've got a problem, would I get a check engine light? And if so, then why haven't I? So those are the kinds of questions. And when I talk about our industry, I'm talking about 10, 15, 20% of our industry is really looking at, increasing sales because, frankly, folks, the newer model cars don't need, I mean, they can come in once a year for service, just once a year. So if your business is built on a small geographical area, then you might think you need to increase sales by creating scenarios that sound really good and cost a lot of money. And so I'm suggesting you just pay attention to that. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. We've got 20 minutes left to the show, and I can get you in. 602-508-0960. You can call. And just tell me your make and model of your car, and then tell me what the symptoms are or what the problem is or who said what. But let's not use names, though. So let's leave that part out. So my shop said, or I took it in for an oil change, and the shop said, that kind of stuff. We'll leave all that other stuff out. 602-508-0960. 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. When it comes to servicing and diagnosing and repairing your diesel, one of the best shops in town, without a doubt, is Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Nate, you just have to sit with him for 4 minutes, 5 minutes, and you will understand he has got the Chevy, the Dodge, the Ford, one ton and lower. He's got that handled. So he's up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. He has a really nifty website. They sell parts 24 hours a day on their website, so you can look and compare about fresh air kits, cold air kits, and different modifications that you can make on your diesel trucks. And so Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a great place. I know Nate. There's times I have to call him and ask him a diesel question, and between the two of us, and most of the time him, because that's what he specializes in, he'll come through for me. But it's also important to know that if you have a Chevy or a Ford gasoline motor that needs an oil change, he can help you with that as well. But strictly diesel sticks pretty tightly to diesel kinds of cars and trucks. Anyway, let's go to the phones, and we'll do the best we can with Anna. Anna, good morning. How can I help you?
Actually, Anna dropped. Let's go to Jim.
Jim, you're next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Thank you for your show.
Thank you.
Quick question. The plastic coolant tub under the hood has a fill mark on it. Do you check that when the car is running, or do you check that when the car is off?
Okay. All right. I'm going to let you answer your own question, but I'm just going to – when you start the car, the coolant will expand. And as everything gets hotter, then we're going to move a lot more coolant in. So if it has – it does it have a fill and an add, or does it have a hot or a cold on the jug? It's the coolant overflow jug you're talking about.
Right. It has a fill and add.
Okay. Okay. So could that fill be full, the word full – F-U-L-L instead of F-I-L-L? Could that be it?
Oh, no, I don't know.
Okay, well, let me just tell you. The highest mark is that's what it's going to be typically when it's hot. The lowest mark is going to be when it's cold. So in the morning, you pop the hood, it should be at the lower mark because as you warm the car up, it's going to push a little coolant into the jug, and then when it cools off, the engine sucks it back into the engine. So we're going to transfer about a quart of fluid back and forth every time you heat it up and every time you cool it down. So, and okay. Let me just tell you the bottom line. If there's coolant in the jug first thing in the morning, you're okay.
Okay, let's say it's a quart low.
I don't want you.
I've been filling it when it's the engine is cold.
Okay. Well, and what happens then is if you fill it up, then we need to push another quart of hot coolant into the overflow, and then we're just going to puke that on the ground because now let me ask you a question. The cap on the reservoir, is it a pressurized cap or is it a plastic cap?
Plastic.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you have what we call an open system. And so if there's coolant in the jug in the first thing in the morning, don't worry about it. Just leave it alone. But if you fill it up, then it's just going to puke out that extra quart because it has no place to go. So I'd check it in the morning, and if it's got coolant in it, I wouldn't mess with it at all. Okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you. You betcha. Ray, you're up next.
Yeah, Mark, I got a 2013 Ford F-250 diesel that I just replaced one of the batteries because it tested bad, and I was told that I should replace them both. Is that true?
It depends on the quality of the testing. So there's a lot of pieces of equipment, and let's start with the Fred Flintstone ones, okay? We do this and we do that, and it gives us a thumbs up or a thumbs down, or it gives us a red or a green or whatever. Now, let's go to the Microsoft kind of machine. This machine was going to go in. It's going to analyze the performance of the engine or the battery. It's going to draw it down and see how long it recovers and how fast it recovers. It's also going to look at all the circuits inside the battery, and it's going to do a bunch of testing, and then it's going to give us a CCA number that better matches the one on the battery. So if it's got a 550 CCA, then I better be within 50 points of 550 CCA. I don't want to be 219. So if you do a good job now, I can tell you that we would prefer our customers buy both because my customer's not typically in a really good mood when they have to go back for the second one. If they're both the same age and the battery dies because you've exceeded its ability to charge up and then provide electrical power, charge up and go down, up and down, plus vibration as you drive down the road, that shakes the hell out of the battery and causes problems. So let me change your question. Mark, have you ever changed just one battery in all the diesels you own? And the answer is double heck no. Why not? Well, because too many times I've ended up a month later or 6 months later doing another battery. And then they're out of sequence and they're out of warranty. So I'd prefer they just be in the warranty at the same time, at the same place. So you could do either one. There's no right or wrong, but I think it's in your best interest to do both. But people are going to say, Mark, that's in the shop's best interest too. And I agree with that. It is in the shop's best interest, but it's very much in the best interest of the customer.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. You betcha. You betcha. Those are the tough ones. It's kind of like, well, if you need two front tires, do you buy all four? Well, it just depends on what kind of car you have, how many miles you have on it. If you're going to be somebody that's traveling from Phoenix to Tucson every day, and we're going to take the front tires off of it, and the back tires are half or more gone, then we'll open that door. If you do it now, this is your bill. And if you do it, don't you do it now, then this is, it's half that much money for the two front tires. So those are, hopefully you have a discussion with someone that you trust at that facility to talk about those kinds of things. And that's kind of the hard part. It's just like anything else. When you can go to five different doctor's offices and have five different conversations. But I think if you did that test, so to speak, you'd find that three of them or four of them were on the same wavelength. They were on the same song about what's going on. There's probably one that's out there in Never Never Land, or if it's like the car repair shops, it just really has to do with how busy are we and how busy do we want to be, and why aren't we busy and stuff like that. So it's a difficult situation. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We have five lines available, and if you'd like to call, you can. Got 9 minutes left in the show, and I can get at least a couple of different callers in, so if you have a car question, you're welcome to do that. I think the best self-defense for car expense is just, please write down what I need, put a price to it, and tell me why on my work order. You see, if you ask them to do that in a nice way, and it can sound like this, you know, my memory's not as good as it used to, and I'm going to forget this in an hour, but do me a favor, just write it down on the work order there. See, in the remarks section, you know, where you kind of communicate, that text field you have, write down what it is I need and why I need it, and then put a price next to it so that will remind me. If they're telling you a lie, if they're misrepresenting something, or if they're making something up, like you're due for this service, but in reality, your manual says, no, he's not due for this service. He's a year and a half away. She is a year and a half away from this service. That, I'm not a lawyer, but there's civil law and criminal law, and it's criminal to lie about something that benefits you in the auto repair industry. So that's kind of fraud, I think. You're not allowed to do that. I'm not allowed to tell you that you need front brakes when really you don't need front brakes, but I want to sell you front brakes because that's a $350 job, and I don't really have to change your front brakes because you've already got good brakes. So I'm just going to charge you for the front brakes, but I'm not going to do the front brakes. And if you think that there's nobody out there that does that, you live in Pirtleville, Arizona. Okay, who's on the phone?
Say hello to Dennis.
Dennis, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Mark. Good to talk to you. I got a question. I was just looking at the new Consumer Reports magazine and on Goodyear tires or RV tires. I know you talked about this before, and I don't know if you get to talk about it on the air lately because I don't get to listen all the time. But anyway, I just wondering what your take is on that. Is Goodyear admitting anything yet or making any improvements?
I can be real plain to you. I have been involved with the Goodyear tire RV fiasco since the 80s.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about it several times.
I don't sell Goodyear tires. I'll never sell Goodyear tires. They're still in a lot of trouble. They have recently been found guilty of a variety of lies and cheating and misrepresenting stuff. And the test documents of the tire, with the specific tires called a G159 Goodyear, this is what the deal was. That tire was initially created and designed for inner city delivery vehicles like FedEx, like the other guys. So this was an inner city. Well, the motorhomes came, started. All of a sudden, the motorhome craze went, and they sold them to the motorhome environment, and these tires are now doing 70 miles an hour down the highway. They weren't designed for that. They were designed for inner city driving. People were dying. Mark Salem was hired as a mechanical expert on many of these cases. The big case that brought Goodyear to the knees was this. Goodyear had been telling everybody that these tests of these tires had been lost for years. One day, someone accidentally sent the wrong file to a lawyer on the East Coast, and that file had all the testing documents and showed clearly that this tire came apart at 55, 60 miles an hour. Now, Mark Salem had numerous of these tires. So the answer to your question is, I don't sell Goodyear tires. I'm happy to rotate them. I'm happy to do whatever you need. But you, and I'll tell you something else. You bring your motorhome in and it's got Goodyear tires on it, I'm not even touching that motorhome. I don't want to be in the food chain when one of the tires blows and I'm blamed for it. And not too long ago.
I don't put them on my.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't put them on my motorhome, though. No, never will.
Yeah. No, never. The other day I was looking at a friend of mine up here in Payson, and he got a new motorhome, and I'm looking at it, and we're all enjoying it, and it's a Fleetwood Bounder, just like two or three of them that I've owned. And I pull the spare tire off, and it's got a G159 hanging on the spare that's more than 25 years old. And you know what I did? He's a good friend of mine. He's just a wonderful person. And I said, I'm going to take your tire. And I put a brand new Toyo on it, and I gave it back to him. I said, here, I got your Goodyear traded off. It's not true. But I just took the tire from him. I just said, I can't let you put this tire on the road. So many people have died. And so I just don't like the company, and they got caught with their pants down, and now we have all the testing data, and so the government has fined them substantial money. And it has nothing to do with the local retailers. It has to do with the mothership. The mothership. Yeah. And so, I'm not. I had an attorney come in, and he had his dad had died and gave him the motorhome, and I said, I'm not touching your motorhome. So he had us put new tires on it to make sure those tires didn't get on the road again. We drilled 1.5-inch holes in the sidewall in every one of the 6 tires that came off his motorhome. So we just drill holes in the sidewalls. There ain't no patch big enough to do a 1.5-inch hole in the sidewall, and we're done. But you've just wound me up, and I'm going to...
2 minutes.
It's going to take me a while to calm down.
Well, I'm sorry about that, but I just want to see what the latest was with them. No, I wouldn't put them on there. In fact, the last that I got on my Motor Armor Toyos, and I'm real happy with them.
And we sell the heck out of those because those are a big truck tire, and they're a good tire. Folks, the Goodyear tire fiasco goes way back to the 80s. And it was just a matter of this tire continually came apart and caused damage and stuff. And the Goodyear, it's always the customer's fault. They had it overloaded. They were going too fast, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, this file became available, and it showed that this tire was a piece of crap from the very beginning, and it didn't pass half of the high-speed tests, yet they're putting them on motorhomes that are going to go 75 miles an hour. And so finally they did get caught, and it was here in Arizona. And the fine to Goodyear, and people were fired, and they cleaned house, and they did this, and they did that. But they've been financially punished in a very big way. But it has more to do with the government fining them than anything else. But there was a case at the very end where the attorney that was working that case, is him and I were together on that. And I think they deposed me 3 times. I think it was 2 or 3 times. For hours and hours, and asking me the same question to see if they could work me over. The guy that was representing Goodyear at the time no longer works for that law firm. And so I think that they may have patched that hole with him on the outside as well, but I don't know that to be the fact. Anyway, I got to go. Thank you very much for bringing that up. Dennis, and my email is mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. If you have a car question, you're welcome to send me. But put your phone number in there so if I can call you and ask you to fill in some blanks on your question. How many miles you got on that? And is this the first time it's happened? And so forth and so on. So mark@marksalem.com. Please drive safely. Please wear your seatbelt. That's going to save your life 99 times out of 100.